Hello, here is your KVNF regional newscast for Thursday, July 26th. Here is the final part of a five-episode series about water issues in the Southwest and the Colorado River. This series examines five specific communities in the Southwest and highlights conservation efforts as the Colorado River slows to a trickle during this ongoing drought season. Today, Denver. Between growing populations and changing climate conditions, our water sources are getting crunched. Communities in some very dry states have had to get creative about where to get their water, sometimes purifying sewage into drinking water. Now, more western cities are headed in that direction. But there's a problem, the ick factor. Ray Ellen Bichel from the Mountain West News Bureau reports.
Paul Rosin is a psychologist at the University of Pennsylvania, and for the last 30 years or so, he's been studying disgust, why people think things are gross. In one experiment, he asked people, would they put on a sweater that Hitler had worn?
And almost everybody says no.
So then Rosin asked people, how about if he thoroughly cleaned the sweater, or dyed it to look different, or even unraveled the yarn and made it into a new one?
And most people don't want anything to do with it, even if you do all that stuff.
But there was something that did get people to reconsider.
Mother Teresa.
If Mother Teresa put on the sweater first, then some people would consider putting it on too. That study might sound like the stuff of academic ivory towers, but
it really caught the attention of the water industry.
That's Brent Haddad. He's a water resources economist at the University of California, Santa Cruz. Haddad says water engineers had come up with amazing ways to turn sewage into clean, drinkable water. It was like finding a way to turn trash into gold.
And the public would have nothing to do with it.
So Haddad reached out to Rosin to figure out how they could conquer people's squeamishness. They ended up doing a series of studies together, and here's what they found.
Well, there's two strategies. One is tell them they've been drinking toilet water all their lives. Your toilet water goes out in the ocean, so does everybody else's toilet water, and then it's coming back in rain.
And what, he says, do you think river water is? A lot of it is just treated sewage from towns upstream. But that tactic, the whole world is gross tactic, doesn't work for everyone. Others need help ignoring the water's gross past. Haddad says we do this mental trick all the time, like when we sleep in hotel rooms.
There's a really good chance that that pillow was in places and in contact and having experiences that would just be appalling to the next person who comes to the room.
But he says, in our heads, we tell ourselves, the cleaning crew came through. Everything's clean.
And we're perfectly fine sleeping on that bed. And we frame out any history of that hotel room.
Haddad says, to frame out the sewage's history, it helps to explain to people exactly how it gets purified. The tech exists to make it safe and drinkable straight away. But he says most of the time, treated sewage goes back into nature first, like an aquifer or a stream, and mixes with other water. Then it gets pulled back out and retreated again for drinking. He says the idea of the water spending time in nature helps people ignore its less appealing past, just like they can ignore the hotel room's past.
And so people can easily say, oh, well, I'm getting the fresh stuff.
Another thing that helps is to show people that it's safe by pointing to other people who drink purified wastewater, like astronauts on the International Space Station. Their drinking water gets purified from all sorts of stuff. Breath, sweat, urine.
Their game. Otherwise, they don't go up there.
Urgent need can also speed up the process, like a severe drought in West Texas that led the city of Big Spring to turn sewage into drinking water all in one go. No nature time necessary. At some point, people had to just drink it. And that's the thinking here at Declaration Brewing Company in Denver. Because while there might not be one single Mother Teresa for recycled water, beer comes pretty darn close.
What are you drinking?
Centurion.
Brewery founder Mike Blandford takes a seat on the patio with a freshly poured Pilsner in front of him. It's made with recycled water.
It's very crispy, refreshing, clean, nice dry finish, exactly what you'd expect out of a very classic example of an American Pilsner.
Spokespeople with Denver Water say the city could be drinking recycled water in about 40 years. And less than an hour's drive south of this brewery, the town of Castle Rock is currently upgrading its water treatment plant to render drinking quality water from sewage by 2020.
It's absolutely the wave of the future. I mean, this is the right thing.
Blandford and his colleagues at Declaration Brewing want to help people prepare for that future before they run into urgent need, like Big Spring, Texas. And easing them in gently with the recycled Pilsner just might do the trick.
In Denver, I'm Ray Ellen Bichel.
This story is a part of a collaborative series from KVNF, the Colorado River Reporting Project at KUNC, the Mountain West News Bureau, and Elemental, covering sustainability. Coloradans concerned about climate change can make a difference every time they sit down at the dinner table. Eric Gladys has more.
Researchers say they've tapped the most comprehensive estimate of greenhouse gas emissions created by U.S. consumer food purchases, and those emissions are on par with other major contributors to climate change. Rebecca Boehm is lead author of the report from the University of Connecticut. She says consumers are in a position to make a big impact each time they go to a restaurant or grocery store.
The easiest way to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from your diet or your food purchases is to purchase less red meat and animal products. They are more carbon intensive to produce. Plant-based diets generate lower greenhouse gas emissions.
Researchers found that the life cycle of food purchases, from growing and harvesting crops to marketing, packaging, and transportation, created 16% of the nation's greenhouse gas emissions in 2013. By comparison, commercial and residential activity accounted for 12%, with industrial activities adding 21%. The single largest contributor of CO2 continues to be coal-fired power plants. Boehm says helping reduce climate pollution doesn't have to mean giving up meat altogether. Poultry and seafood have a lower carbon footprint, and Boehm says opting for plant-based proteins such as beans and lentils more frequently can make a difference. She notes that because people make decisions about what to eat three times a day, those choices can really add up.
You know, there are plenty of alternatives to the most carbon-intensive foods. There's also potential health benefits to making those changes. So it's sort of a win-win for consumers.
Buying fruits and vegetables from local farmers can also help cut emissions created by transporting goods in refrigerated containers cross-country or across oceans. And while consumers alone can't reshape the nation's food industry, Boehm says they can help support grocery stores and food vendors working to cut their carbon footprint. This is Eric Gladys reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
And that was your KVNF regional newscast for Thursday, July 26th. For KVNF News, I'm Eric Gould. Thanks so much for listening.